Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, October 13th. I'm your reader, Kelly Neff. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for today. Storms likely, with a southeasterly wind at 20 to 30 miles an hour plus. High today, 70. Low tonight, 46. Tomorrow, partly sunny, with a westerly wind at 5 to 10 miles per hour, high 64, low 45. Then on Friday, showers, with a northwesterly wind at 10 to 20 miles an hour, high of 58 and a low of 39. Today's top weather story by meteorologist Corey Thompson. During transition seasons like spring and fall, the shifting of the jet stream can align with other ingredients to create conditions suitable for severe thunderstorms. This happens more often in the spring than fall, although it still can happen with some frequency in October. Using warnings issued by the National Weather Service as a proxy, October is one of the less active months for severe storms in the year. It trails all months between March and September. On average, about 14 severe thunderstorm or tornado warnings are issued in the state each October. So far this year, none. If we don't see any, it would be the first October since 2014 to go without a warning in the state. And that is today's top weather story from meteorologist Corey Thompson. On today's front page is a story written by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette, Rival Wants Piece of New North Liberty Medical Campus. Dateline, North Liberty. Given the state's recent about-face in allowing construction of a $395 million University of Iowa hospital in North Liberty to proceed, it should grant the same permission for construction of a nearby, unaffiliated $17.9 million ambulatory surgery center, the proposed facility argues. Steindler North Liberty Ambulatory Surgery Center is seeking a certificate of need from the State Health Facilities Council to erect a freestanding facility on 36 acres near the Forever Green Road interchange with Interstate 380. A proposed master plan for the project, which includes a 71,000-square-foot Steindler orthopedic clinic, relocated from its 33,000-square-foot Iowa City space, and a 36,000-square-foot ambulatory surgery center, puts it adjacent to the upcoming UI healthcare development, which drew vocal opposition from community healthcare providers earlier this week. According to the Steindler application, which is expected to be considered by the state this month, what payers, patients, the community, and private physicians need, and what the Certificate of Need application represents, is a choice. The applicant argues that is competition. A choice will keep costs competitive, and that only happens if the choice includes a choice in modern facilities that are lower in cost. Citing points raised in the state's consideration of UIHC's application to build the new hospital in North Liberty, which the State Council first denied and then approved after reviewing a revised application, the Steindler request notes that UIHC has admitted its academic medical center costs are steeper than community health care expenses. According to the application, quote, one way, perhaps the only way, to help control pricing and cost is to give a private physician development the opportunity to create pricing pressure. Approving private practice investment in competitive facilities will absolutely keep healthcare costs in check, and it may invite development of a community hospital presence, Mercy or others, that would be operationally efficient, proper-sized, modern, and ideally located. Denial of the Steindler application, it argues, quote, will likely lead to market monopoly by UIHC and the loss of the private physician ecosystem, end quote. Although the Certificate of Need application under consideration is for the proposed ambulatory surgery center only, it paves the way for realization of the site's master plan, which includes an adjacent orthopedic clinic, hospital, medical office building, and hotel. The opportunity in this instance is for the State Health Facilities Council to evaluate the true nature of need in Johnson County and open the way for competitive investment, according to the application. Doing so, they say, will keep quality of care high and cost of care low for Eastern Iowans. The State Council in August granted a certificate to UIHC to build a $230 million, 300,000-square-foot hospital in North Liberty. After receiving that approval, UIHC revealed it also plans to erect 169,000 square feet of academic, research, and clinic space on the site, bringing its North Liberty footprint to 469,000 square feet and its total cost to $395 million. A tentative timeline for that project has construction beginning this month and wrapping up in spring of 2025. UIHC will tap revenue bonds, building usage funds, and donations to cover the costs, not taxpayer dollars. Community health care providers pushed the state hard to deny UIHC permission to build, arguing they're struggling to retain and attract staff. Many have available beds, and some could go out of business if UIHC veers into the community health care issue. UIHC officials rejected the notion it's taking patients from community providers, noting expansion would allow it to continue serving the sickest Iowans who need care. But Steindler, in his application, references challenges that local providers are experiencing in making the case for more facilities unaffiliated with UIHC. In addressing the effect this development would have on other providers, the application notes Mercy, Iowa City, quote, is now seeing an impact on its outpatient orthopedic surgery utilization, but not due to Steindler orthopedic clinic surgeons, but due to patient requests and payer pressure, end quote. In the application, Steindler said it expects an argument will be made that Mercy Hospital, Iowa City, is dependent upon Steindler Orthopedic Clinic surgeons, and the impact on Mercy Hospital, Iowa City, will be significant if Steindler Orthopedic Clinic surgeons are no longer doing outpatient orthopedic surgeries at the hospital. Steindler reports its surgeons have been, quote, exceptional and loyal providers of orthopedic physician services to Mercy Hospital, Iowa City patients, end quote. But the application says Mercy Hospital, Iowa City has century-old infrastructure and does not have the financial wherewithal to invest in new technology. The application notes Steindler has invited Mercy, Iowa City to participate in the North Liberty development. It says whether Mercy Hospital, Iowa City intends to participate remains to be seen. Also on the front page is a story written by Marissa Payne of the Gazette. Cedar Rapids directs federal aid to strapped nonprofits. Dateline Cedar Rapids. Local nonprofits soon will have an opportunity to tap into a city funding stream that dried up for a couple of budget years in the COVID-19 pandemic as Cedar Rapids allocates its share of federal stimulus money. On Tuesday, the City Council approved a resolution authorizing city staff to create a grant program for eligible nonprofits that would have received a slice of the city's hotel-motel tax revenue in fiscal 2021, the budget year that ended June 30th, but did not, as the pandemic upended travel worldwide, reducing the cash Cedar Rapids reaped from a tax on overnight guests. This program will use a maximum of $750,000 of Cedar Rapids' nearly $28.2 million allocation of Federal American Rescue Plan Act relief funds. In the past, organizations that have received a share of the tax funds included the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art, Bruce Moore, Indian Creek Nature Center, and the African American Museum of Iowa, to name a few of the cultural attractions, recreation programs, and institutions that have benefited from the tourism tax. Mayor Brad Hart said, "This is really great news for so many of our area nonprofits. We recognize how important those nonprofits are to our community. This funding, I know, will play a really important role for so many of these nonprofits and keep our community vibrant and moving forward." Turning into the Iowa Today page, here's a story written by Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette. No decision on new trial in Cedar Rapids murder. Dateline Cedar Rapids. A judge Tuesday did not rule on a motion for a new trial for a Cedar Rapids man convicted in July of killing Chris Bagley because one of the witnesses couldn't be at the hearing. Sixth Judicial District Judge Christopher Bruns postponed sentencing late last month for 34-year-old Drew Blahnik because of this motion. If the motion is granted, Blahnik will receive a new trial. If it's denied, then his sentencing will be reset. Blahnik has been convicted of second-degree murder and two other charges stemming from Bagley's 2018 slaying. He faces up to 57 years in prison. During the hearing Tuesday, Bruns said he would hear arguments on any of the issues except juror bias because the witness for that couldn't be at the hearing. The main issue disputed during the hearing was the verdict urging instruction given to the jury after they sent notes to the court. The note said one juror wasn't following the instructions and that they were deadlocked. The judge sent back the last note, asking them to continue deliberations to reach a unanimous verdict. Defense attorney Leon Spies says the holdout juror had his or her mind made up, but then the jury came back with a verdict an hour or so later. That, he said, showed no evidence of real deliberation. Spies said the pressure on that juror must have been enormous. Spies said he understood that the judge used approved language, but he views a verdict-turging instruction as explicitly coercive. Linn County Attorney Jerry Vandersanden said the court is given wide discretion to give the Allen charge or a verdict-urging instruction. The instruction can be given if there is a deadlock, as long as it's not coercive. He said the judge used language that appellate courts have upheld. Such instructions have been given to deadlocked jurors in previous trials. A jury received a similar instruction in the trial of Jerome Power, who was convicted in 2012 for the 2010 strangulation death of his neighbor, 68-year-old Doris Bevins of Cedar Rapids. The instruction also was given in the trial of Amy Palmer, who was convicted in 2013 for causing the death of her boyfriend's toddler, Cameron Schlitter. Bruns patterned his instruction to the Blahnik case after the instructions in the Palmer trial because it was upheld by appellate courts. Another hearing will be set to continue arguments on the motions for a new trial. Also on the Iowa Today page, a story written by James Q. Lynch, who's of the Gazette in the Des Moines Bureau. 3 more miles of Marion Trail to be paved. The Iowa Transportation Commission has awarded $400,000 to the Linn County Conservation Board to pave a portion of the Grant Wood Trail, which starts in Marion. The award was among the nearly $1.5 million the commission approved Tuesday for 4 state recreational trails program projects. The program was created in 1988 with the purpose of developing and maintaining recreational trails and trail-related facilities for motorized and non-motorized users. This funding is available to cities, counties, state agencies, local governments, and nonprofit organizations through an annual application-based program. The Grant Wood Trail, which now has paved and crushed limestone surfaces, is an 8.5-mile trail originating in Marion, with another 3.8 miles in 2 segments in Jones County. The funds will be used to pave about 3 miles of the trail east of Highway 13 from Waldo's Rock Park, which is at 6303 Partners Avenue, to Oxley Road. The trail was constructed a few years ago with a limestone surface in anticipation of hard surfacing when funding was secured. The work is expected to be done in the coming year. The Iowa Department of Transportation will bid the project. In other action, the commission approved a targeted jobs creation loan of $200,000 and a grant of $180,000 for a Canadian Pacific Unit train expansion at Patterson Sand Company based in northeast Iowa. The project will help retain 15 jobs and create 35 jobs, according to the Iowa DOT. On the Iowa Today page is a story written by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette, Marion Woman Arrested After Dead Cats Are Found. Dateline, Marion. A 24-year-old Marion woman was arrested Monday after officers found four dead cats in her apartment, which she had not visited in weeks, according to court documents. Officers were called to Rebecca Pisarczyk's apartment in the 700 block of Bentley Drive Monday afternoon at 5:36 about reported animal neglect. They were told they would find a dead cat in the apartment, and officers confirmed they could see one through Pisarczyk's apartment window, according to the arrest report. As she was not home, they contacted her at work, and Pisarczyk returned home a short time later. She gave them consent to go into her apartment, and they found the remains of four cats that apparently died from neglect. They were in varying stages of decay, according to police. One barely alive cat showed obvious signs of malnourishment, the police reported. That surviving cat was taken to Cedar Rapids Animal Care and Control. Pisarczyk told investigators they were her cats, but she hadn't been home in about 2 weeks. According to police, quote, the defendant further admitted she had not provided any food or water for the cats and had not arranged for anyone to care for the animals. Pisarczyk was arrested on four counts of animal neglect, resulting in death, and one count of animal neglect not resulting in death. She is being held in lieu of $8,300 in bond. Court documents filed after her initial appearance Tuesday indicate Pisarczyk might benefit from its intensive pretrial mental health reentry and jail diversion program. Thus, as a condition of her release, she must be screened for eligibility. In a COVID story, vaccinations among staff at state-run facilities stall, written by Clark Kaufman. The number of unvaccinated public employees caring for people in state-run facilities has remained largely unchanged in the past month, with 41% of the workers of the Boys State Training School in Eldora still refusing a COVID-19 inoculation. The most recently released data from the Iowa Department of Human Services shows that as of last Friday, a total of 974 workers and patient clients at State Department of Human Services facilities have been infected with COVID-19 at some point during the pandemic. Three residents have died. 10 workers and 8 patient clients have yet to recover. The data also shows that a total of 104 out of the 177 state employees at that Eldora school and residential facility for troubled youth have been fully vaccinated. That's one fewer than the 105 reported September 24th, most likely the result of staff turnover and some new employees not being fully vaccinated. Over the course of the pandemic, 113 workers and youth at the Eldora facility have tested positive for COVID-19. One worker has yet to recover. 6 of the home's 52 youth and 21 of the home's 177 workers have had COVID-19 at some point in the past 90 days, according to state data. The numbers suggest that at least one of those employee infections occurred in just the past 3 weeks. The Eldora home is run by the Iowa Department of Human Services, which operates 6 residential facilities in Iowa. Department spokesman Matt Hyland has said the agency has continued to work on vaccinations and that the agency knows it is critical our team members at our facilities be vaccinated. Of the 6 state-run facilities, the 2 with the highest vaccine-refused rates have consistently been the Glenwood Resource Center for the Profoundly Disabled, where the vaccine refusal rate among employees has held steady at 38%, and the Boys State Training School. Many of those who are refusing the vaccine are health care workers, providing direct, hands-on care for individuals, and some are administrators. Moving on to the Insight page, we have today's Gazette editorial, which is headlined, Strong Candidates in District 3. The Gazette says, voters in Cedar Rapids City Council District 3 must choose between two strong candidates, incumbent council member Dale Todd and newcomer Tamara Marcus. Todd is regional director of development for Hatch Development Group with a long record of public service and community involvement. Marcus is sustainability program manager for Linn County, a climate science and social justice leader. Todd's experience and accomplishments tilted our endorsement in his direction. Todd told our editorial board, "I understand how the city works and how to make things happen." He called himself a student of city government. Todd has made things happen. He was among a handful of dreamers who spearheaded efforts to transform Cedar Lake, once a source of power plant cooling water and a dumping point for polluted stormwater, into a recreational destination. After years of uphill effort, the now $20 million project is on track as part of Connect CR, which also includes a pedestrian bridge across the Cedar River in the Nubo neighborhood. Todd was the Commissioner of Parks and Public Property under the city's previous form of government, the first black member of the city council. He worked to modernize the city's municipal parks system, which is the state's largest. His drive to promote and improve outdoor recreation in Cedar Rapids remains strong. During his latest tenure on the council, Todd has worked on improving District 3's core neighborhoods, addressing the need for economic opportunity and problems, including gun violence. The need for affordable housing is among the city's top issues, and Todd's role as a developer who has been helping bring affordable and market-rate housing to the city gives him keen insights. We were less enamored with Todd's answers to our questions about improving city-county relations, which have deteriorated. Todd seemed dismissive of the notion that the city and county could cooperate on initiatives such as flood protection. Todd told us, "I would be open to anything. If you want to bring Dr. Phil in, I'm fine." Marcus's passion for addressing climate change and its consequences was impressive. She's also a leader of Advocates for Social Justice, which led protests that helped convince the city to create a citizen review board to monitor the police department and address potential misconduct. Had Marcus taken on another opponent, she likely would have received our endorsement. But with the prospects for a new mayor being elected November 2nd, we see Todd's experience as invaluable. Also on the inside page is an editorial fellow report from Nicole Shaw of the Gazette, which says, "Diversity must include disabilities." Nicole says, "Diversity, equity, and inclusion have become common buzzwords in job applications over the past year and a half. That mainly has to do with a public outcry for better, more equitable practices and policies from employers to foster accountability. While people often think of race and gender in relation to DEI efforts, the scope of accountability expands much further. Disability awareness remains a mystery that is seldom approached or acknowledged in these discussions for fair and equal treatment in the workplace." Before diving into problems solving for the lack of inclusion people with disabilities experience, it's important to understand what a disability even is and how it can range from physical impairments or restrictions to so-called invisible ailments. In simple Centers for Disease Control and Prevention terms, a disability is a condition that limits a person's ability to engage in certain activities or interact with the world around them. While some disabilities present physically, such as blindness or cerebral palsy, others are imperceptible, such as high-functioning autism, depression, or chronic pain or fatigue. Now, the reality of living with a disability in Iowa and the United States is that the systems in place don't necessarily work. That lack of understanding is why people with disabilities ages 16 and up reached an unemployment rate of 12.6% in 2020, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. People without disabilities have a significantly smaller unemployment rate of 7.9%. In Iowa, the rate of unemployment for people with disabilities was 9.1% in 2019, a number that has grown since the pandemic, although no official state government statistics have been released yet. And having a higher unemployment rate is even more harmful to people with disabilities because they have higher costs to meet their basic health needs. As work shortages scourge the nation in virtually every industry, employers claim they're looking to fill the gaps as quickly as possible. Left out of this conversation of work shortages are people with disabilities. So instead of reaching out in the ways one conventionally would, consider how a person with a disability might add value to business and service. Tax credit programs in Iowa are even designed to benefit employers that hire people with disabilities. Employers must redefine what DEI looks like in the workplace. Inclusivity is a behavior, not just a policy or buzzword. The way forward is to provide equal access. That doesn't just mean offering the same benefits and positions to all people, but going the extra mile to close the gaps between marginalized folks and those who have the privilege of traditional systems working in their favor. The reality is everyone needs to change their mindset of what a disability is and who might have it. One in four Americans lives with a disability. That requires employers to have a lot more nuance in understanding what a disability is in order to properly accommodate all walks of life. The result is a sustainable system in which people with disabilities can contribute to the workforce while obtaining financial stability. And that is from Nicole Shaw, a Gazette editorial fellow. We have two community letters today. The first one is from Mike Butterfield of Cedar Rapids, who says, "In the more than 10 years that I have known Mayor Brad Hart, I have seen an unfailing passion and dedication to the Cedar Rapids community. He has faced enormous challenges in his time as mayor. Through the challenges, he has continued to work tirelessly to lead our community toward a promising future. Flood protection has taken great strides forward. Business investment in our community continues to grow, and our streets continue to improve. He has worked for the best interests of our community despite political roadblocks. I am proud to have supported Brad's election in 2017 and ask you to join me proudly supporting his reelection." That's from Mike Butterfield of Cedar Rapids. The second community letter is from Joanne McNeil of Cedar Rapids, who says, "Governor Kim Reynolds defends her interest in the southern border by saying her first responsibility is to the health and safety of Iowans, which she said is being affected by border activities. While there are certainly issues to be addressed at the southern border and all immigration policy, her statement is malarkey. Her reluctance to take measures that would keep Iowans safe and healthy from the COVID pandemic indicates her first priority is political theaters, not our health and safety." And that is from Joanne McNeil of Cedar Rapids. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, October 13th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Let's start today with the other shorter notices from Decorah. Amy A. Usgard, age 59, died Monday, August 2nd. The Gelstall Funeral Home in Decorah will be in charge of those arrangements. From Independence, Phyllis Laurie Cornwell, age 87, died Saturday, October 9th. The Rife Family Center Funeral Home and Crematory in Independence will assist the family. From Lansing, Dave Munchoff, age 79, died Sunday, October 10th. The Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Lansing is in charge of those arrangements. From Stanwood, Donna Joanne Frederick Dauber, age 71, died Monday, October 11th. Assisting the family will be the Fry Funeral Home in Tipton. And from Wellman, Tamara Lynette Davidson, age 56, died Monday, October 11th. The Powell Funeral Home of Wellman will be in charge of those arrangements. Now we'll take a look at the longer funeral announcements. Larry T. Finley, age 76, of Cedar Rapids, died Friday, December 4th, 2020, at his home. Please join family and friends for a casual lunch to remember Larry Finley from noon to 3 p.m. Sunday, October 17th at Tucker Park Blue Pavilion, which is at 101 B Avenue in Hiawatha. Randy Ham, age 60, of Cedar Rapids, passed away on Sunday, October 10th following an extended illness. Private interment at the Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids with arrangements by Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services of Cedar Rapids. Aaron P. Sellers, age 40, formerly of Cedar Rapids, now of Stacyville, passed away peacefully at his home on October 1st. The Schroeder Funeral Home of Osage will be in charge of those arrangements. Prentice H. Thurmond, Jr., age 58, of Cedar Rapids, died Friday, October 8th. A visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. Saturday, October 16th at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. Private burial will take place in Mississippi on Saturday, October 23rd. Gail Leggett of Cedar Rapids was called home on Saturday, September 25th. Friends may visit with the family before the service at 10 a.m. on Monday, October 18th at the Stonebridge Church. The Tehan Funeral Home is serving the family. Memorials may be directed to West Willow Elementary, previously Coolidge, in Gale's memory. Donald Butch Laverne Gaddis, age 85, of Solon, passed away Sunday, October 10th at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. A celebration of life service will be held at 3 p.m. Thursday, October 14th, at St. John Lutheran Church in Ely, where the family will greet visitors from 1 p.m. until service time. Presiding will be Pastor Brian Middlesworth, with burial following the service at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Please wear a face mask, as unvaccinated children will be present. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral is in charge of the arrangements. Memorials may be made to the El Cahir Shrine Children's Transportation Fund, Miracles in Motion, or the St. John Lutheran Church Building Fund. Dallas L. Kibbe, age 80, of Ames, formerly of Cedar Rapids, passed away on Sunday, October 10th, at the Israel Family Hospice House in Ames. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, October 14th, at Christ Community Church at 5501 George Washington Carver Avenue in Ames. Visitation will be held for 1 hour prior to the service at the church. The family welcomes those attending the service to drive their classic cars. In honor of Dallas, there will be a short classic car cruise following the funeral service, to be followed by refreshments at Christ Community Church. Burial will be held with military funeral honors at 2 p.m. Friday, October 15th at the Union Cemetery in Osage City, Kansas. Barbara Ann Cook Anenson of Coralville died October 11th at Keystone Place at Forever Green Road in North Liberty. Barbara's funeral will be at 2 p.m. Sunday, October 17th at Christ the King Lutheran Church in Iowa City. The family will receive visitors at the church from 5 to 8 p.m. Saturday, October 16th, and then 1 hour prior to the services on Sunday. Burial will be at 1 p.m. Monday, October 18th at Wallingford, Iowa Cemetery. Instead of flowers, memorials may be made to the Alzheimer's Association, the Special Olympics, or to either Gloria Day Lutheran Church or Christ the King Lutheran Church. Deidre Ann Long, age 60, of Manchester, passed away on Monday, October 11th at the Regional Medical Center in Manchester. Memorial service will be at 1:30 p.m. Sunday, November 7th at the Manchester United Methodist Church with the Reverend Phil Rogers officiating. Beverly Jean Montrose, age 88, of Millersburg, passed away in her home on October 10th. Celebration of life service will be held at 10:30 Friday morning, October 15th at the Millersburg United Methodist Church. Burial will be in the Millersburg Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the Powell Funeral Home in North English. Memorials are for the Millersburg United Methodist Church, the Millersburg Fire Department, and the Millersburg First Responders. Patrick J. McElliott, age 74, of Cedar Rapids, passed away Friday, October 8th at Mercy Medical Center. Family will greet friends from 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday, October 14th, at the Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services in Cedar Rapids. A rosary and vigil service will begin at 4 p.m. The funeral mass will be at 10 o'clock Friday morning at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Cedar Rapids, with an additional visitation for 1 hour prior to the service. Burial to follow at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. And William Terry Lake, age 65, died Saturday, October 9th at home, surrounded by his loving family. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church, with the Reverend Brent Hartwig officiating. The service will be live streamed. And that live stream will be at the webpage of Lensing Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Iowa Donor Network or Our Redeemer Lutheran Church. Turning our attention now to sports, the MVC Volleyball Championship Pool was held yesterday. Iowa City Liberty was the champion, defeating Cedar Rapids Xavier 25-13 and 25-8. Also in sports, the boys and girls cross-country rankings for the week are out. Taking a look at the boys' rankings, in Class 4A, the number one team in the state is Sioux City North. Iowa City City High is number 3. Cedar Rapids Prairie is 10th. Iowa City Liberty is 14th. Iowa City West is 15th. Cedar Rapids Kennedy is 16th. And Linmar is 17th. In Class 3A boys, the number one team in the state is Dallas Center Grimes. Marion is number 2. Solon is number 5. Lisbon is number 7. Clear Creek Amana is number 15. The Washington Demons are number 16. And Center Point Urbana is number 18. In Class 2A, Danville New London is the number 1 team in the state. Tipton is number 2, with Williamsburg 3rd and Mid Prairie 4th. In Class 1A, Earlham is the number 1 team in the state. Iowa City Regina is 13th. And North Lynn is number 19. The girls' cross-country rankings are out as well. In Class 4A, the number 1 team in the state is Pleasant Valley. Cedar Rapids Prairie is number 6. Linmar is 11th. Iowa City High is 13th. Iowa City West is 15th. Iowa City Liberty is 18th. In the girls' 3A, the number 1 team in the state is Solon. Marion is number 11. Mount Vernon Lisbon is 12, Center Point Urbana is 14th, Clear Creek Amana is 17th, and the Washington Demons are 18th. In 2A girls, the number 1 team in the state is Mid Prairie. Tipton is number 4, Williamsburg is number 5. And in 1A, leading the way is Logan Magnolia. Iowa City Regina is 7th, and North Lynn is 8th. Going back to the community page, we take a look at a story written by Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette called Buy Here, Help There. Dateline, Iowa City. An Iowa City nonprofit will host its 5th annual Fair Trade Oriental Rug event later this month to financially empower Pakistani women who have little opportunity for employment in rural villages. 10,000 Villages, which is a nonprofit fair trade store on the Pet Mall, will host the event October 20th through 24th at 923 East 2nd Street at Iowa River Landing in Coralville to help residents of the corridor learn about this local store's mission to help improve the lives of Pakistani women. About 300 rugs, each handmade in Pakistani homes by fairly paid adult artisans, will be available to see and purchase in a variety of designs and sizes. Rugs and runners will be available. Elizabeth Presidio Gannell, the executive director of 10,000 Villages, said, "When you purchase a rug through 10,000 Villages, you will not only invest in a beautiful piece of functional art, but you are also supporting lives, culture, and education in Pakistan, especially during the pandemic." The rug event is a partnership between the nonprofit and Bunyard, a fair trade artisan group in Pakistan, according to a news release. Bunyard means foundation. An introduction to Bunyard rugs explains how these rugs are made and what makes a quality oriental rug. It explains how knotting rugs is changing the lives of women and their families in Pakistan. According to Bunyard's website, it is based in Lahore, Pakistan, and the rug artisan group includes more than 850 families from more than 100 villages who are involved in hand-knotted rug production. Part of their mission is to provide vital and fair income to Pakistani rug artisans who otherwise would have very few sustainable outlets for their craft and artistry. Bunyan, according to the website, provides a foundation for women by paying them a living wage to make the rugs on looms set in their homes. They can work on the looms around their other responsibilities in the home. This gives the women stable employment year-round, and the income provides financial independence and allows them to contribute to the success of their family. The richly colored, uniquely designed rugs will be on display, and those attending also can learn more about the craft from Yusuf Chaman, the director of Bunyan. Safety measures will be in place, and visitors are asked to wear a mask and social distance. Event times will be 10 to 5, October 20th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, then from 11 to 5 on October 24th. Let's take a look at some Eastern Iowa briefs, including this one from Cedar Rapids about Snow Buddies. The city of Cedar Rapids is rolling out the next phase of its pilot Snow Buddies program. The program pairs residents in need of assistance with volunteers who can help clear sidewalks of snow and ice accumulations in the winter. The program is intended to benefit residents who are not physically able to remove snow and do not have other resources to remove snow, such as neighbors, friends, or a hired service. In September, a call for volunteers went out for snow heroes who would like to help their neighbors in need this winter. Snow Hero volunteers can sign up on the City of Cedar Rapids website. The number of volunteers identified will ultimately determine the number of Snow Buddy pairings that can be made through the program. The second phase of the program has begun, where residents who meet the program qualifications will be allowed to sign up for request assistance by calling 319-286-5897. Again, that is 319-286-5897. To qualify for assistance, individuals must reside in Cedar Rapids, be 65 years of age or older, and or have a mobility impairment and qualify under the income guidelines. Here's one about celebrating United Nations Day. The Linn County Chapter of the United Nations Association of the United States of America will hold a celebration of United Nations Day, UN Day, October 24th. That's the date in 1945 when the treaty forming the United Nations was ratified by enough countries. The 75th anniversary occurred in 2020, but no celebration was held there because of the pandemic. Join the Linn County Chapter for a celebration at the Hotel at Kirkwood Center. There'll be entertainment by the Deep Dish Divas, which will start at 5:30, and dinner will be served at 6. The program will begin at 7. The dinner will be herb-roasted pork loin or caprese pasta. Reservations can be made by sending a check for $25 payable to Linn County and sent to Box 725 Cedar Rapids. That's Box 725 Cedar Rapids, 52406. And here's an Eastern Iowa generic brief. Iowa's Resource Enhancement and Protection, or REAP, R-E-A-P, the assemblies will begin next week, giving Iowans an opportunity to share and discuss their visions for Iowa's outdoor recreation, soil and water enhancement, historical resources, land management, and more. The meeting for Region 10, which represents Benton, Iowa, Johnson, Jones, Linn, and Washington counties, will be held October 20th at the Conservation Center at Kent Park in Oxford. REAP assemblies are locally led meetings where issues can be brought forth and voted upon. Iowans can discuss the program, recommend changes, and discuss impacts in their area. Delegates also may be selected from the local meeting to attend the REAP Congress in January at the state capitol in Des Moines. Each assembly represents a region of counties, and participants are required to attend the region for the county in which they reside. Meetings are held in the evening and last about 90 minutes. Here's a story written by Marissa Payne of the Gazette. Council finalizes changes to Cedar Rapids School Officer Program. Dateline, Cedar Rapids. The city of Cedar Rapids has officially signed off on changes to the program that places police officers in several Cedar Rapids schools after some students and community members pushed for the program to be modified or eliminated to address racial disparities. The City Council on Tuesday authorized the city manager and city clerk to execute an amended agreement between the city and the Cedar Rapids Community School District to renew, with changes, the school's resource officer program for the July 1, 2021 to June 30, 2022 term. The school board last month approved a number of changes to the program. Under the amended agreement, officers will not play a role in enforcing school rules or discipline, wear soft uniforms to be more approachable, and must allow parents or guardians to be present if their children are questioned by officers in school. The amended agreement also includes the goals of reducing student arrests and racial disparities. Recent Iowa Department of Human Rights data showed that black students in Cedar Rapids schools were 6 times more likely to have allegations of criminal wrongdoing made against them than white students. Less than 3% of all students were arrested by school resource officers over a 4-year period, but black students were arrested at higher rates than white ones, though they make up 19.1% of the student population. Police Chief Wayne Germain says that he and others in the police department met with Superintendent Noreen Bush and Deputy Superintendent Nicole Cookier before that meeting to discuss the recommended changes. Captain Brent Long, who oversees the Community Services Division where the program is housed, said, "One thing that's important, too, when we did all this, is to realize that we have a very good program, and when we got together with the schools, it was to make our program even better. With the school, we now want to create an environment where all students feel safe and supported. We're going to instill in all students and staff a sense of belonging, educate and teach students about appropriate behaviors and responses through restorative and trauma-informed lenses." Well, the agreement also permanently removes full-time officers from McKinley and Roosevelt Middle Schools. Anticipating the change, the district removed them before the first day of school, August 23rd. Instead, those two officers will now be available to all Cedar Rapids Elementary and Middle Schools and provide instruction on active shooter training and lessons on civic engagement, according to the amended agreement. Full-time school resource officers will stay at Kennedy, Jefferson, Washington, and Metro High Schools and Polk Alternative. Under the agreement, officers will receive ongoing training in restorative disciplinary practices, intercultural development inventory, de-escalation strategies, and other topics with Cedar Rapids School employees. Long said the agreement also formalizes a diversion program, which the department has worked on for 2 years, where officers divert first offense violations to the school district. Long said, "We certainly believe that we're not there to arrest, we're there to teach and help." Mayor Brad Hart said he appreciated the department's willingness to modify the program as, quote, "the good work's already been done, but making the changes to better serve our students and our schools and the entire community," end quote. Councilmember Ashley Vinorney, who sits on the Council's Public Safety and Youth Services Committee, said she thinks the Council can help stave off some of the factors that contribute to youth violence through continued investment in community services, affordable housing, and other city programming. Vinorney said, "I see the work that you're doing to support people and to try to teach and train and support them however they're presenting. I think so often what ends up happening is you end up being a band-aid solution for really unattended to social determinants of health. That's hard because there is no other option when people don't have enough food, don't have enough shelter, don't know where their next meal is going to come from, are not safe at home, and so a lot of these things end up in your laps." Here's a story on booster shots that might be of local interest. FDA shifting focus to Moderna, J&J boosters. With many Americans who get Pfizer vaccinations already rolling up their sleeves for a booster shot, millions of others who receive the Moderna or Johnson & Johnson vaccines wait anxiously to learn when it's their turn. Federal regulators begin tackling that question this week. On Thursday and Friday, the Food and Drug Administration convenes its independent advisors for the first stage in the process of deciding whether extra doses of the two vaccines should be dispensed, and if so, who should get them and when. The final go-ahead is not expected for at least another week. After the FDA advisors give their recommendation, the agency itself will make a decision on whether to authorize boosters. Then, next week, a panel convened by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will offer more specifics on who should get them. Its decision is subject to approval by the CDC director. The process is meant to bolster public confidence in the vaccines, but it has already led to conflicts among experts and agencies, and documents the FDA released Tuesday suggest future decisions will be equally difficult. In one earlier vaccine dispute, the CDC's advisory panel last month backed Pfizer boosters at the six-month point for older Americans, nursing home residents, and people with underlying health problems. But CDA Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky overruled her advisors and decided boosters should also be offered to those with high-risk jobs, such as teachers and healthcare workers, adding tens of millions more Americans to the list. Some health experts fear the back-and-forth deliberations are muddling the public effort to persuade the unvaccinated to get their first shots. They worry the talk of boosters will lead people to wrongly doubt the effectiveness of the vaccines in the first place. When the FDA's panel meets to review the Moderna and J&J vaccines, experts will discuss whether a third Moderna shot should contain just half the original dose and what's the best timing for a second shot of the single-dose J&J vaccine. The panel also will look into the safety and effectiveness of mixing and matching different brands of vaccine, something regulators have not endorsed so far. An estimated 103 million Americans are fully vaccinated with Pfizer's formula, 69 million with Moderna's, and 15 million with J&J's, according to the CDC. Regulators took up the question of Pfizer boosters first because the company submitted its data ahead of the other vaccine makers. The FDA meetings come as U.S. vaccinations have climbed back above 1 million per day on average, an increase of more than 50% over the past 2 weeks. The rise has been driven mainly by Pfizer boosters and employer vaccine mandates. While the FDA and CDC so far have endorsed Pfizer boosters for specific groups only, Biden administration officials, including Dr. Anthony Fauci, have suggested that extra shots will eventually be recommended for most Americans. Here's a list of things to do today. There's a community museum. This is the Cedar Rapids Area Genealogy Library. Research your family tree with the help of library volunteers. Enter through the back door. It'll be until 4 o'clock today at the Masonic Building at 813 First Avenue Southeast on the lower level in Cedar Rapids. The cost is free and is for all ages. A museum exhibit at Mildred Pelzer's, Iowa. Mildred Pelzer was an American art teacher, artist, and muralist known for her work in public spaces. One of these commissions was the series of 8 murals for the Hotel Jefferson of Iowa City. In addition to her mural work, Pelzer was known for portraits, floral paintings, and landscapes. That's going on until 4 o'clock, noon to 4 exactly today, at the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art at 410 3rd Avenue Southeast. Cost could be up to $8, and it is for all ages. Under the headline of music, Licorice Shtick, Red Cedar Chamber Music. The Red Cedar Chamber Music's directors and core ensemble, violinist Mira Kim and cellist Corey Bastian, are joined by clarinetist Christine Bellamy and violinist Elizabeth Oakes. It all starts at 1 o'clock today at the Parkview Evangelical Free Church at 15 Foster Road in Iowa City. The cost is free and is for all ages. Join the Cedar Rapids Chess Club for a relaxed casual game session with all levels welcome. That will be tonight from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Cedar Rapids Public Library at 450 5th Avenue Southeast in Cedar Rapids. It's free and for all ages. And a group of former students will reunite in their Harlem neighborhood to pay respects to their beloved and feared teacher. under the theater Our Lady at 121st Street. It does contain adult language and content. That will happen at 8 o'clock tonight at the E.C. Maybe Theater at the University of Iowa Theater Building at 200 North Riverside Drive in Iowa City. The cost will range between $5 and $20, and all ages are welcome. Here's an interesting story that might affect local people. One reason America's employers are having trouble filling jobs was starkly illustrated in a report yesterday. Americans are quitting in droves. The U.S. Department of Labor said that quits jumped to 4.3 million in August, the highest on records dating back to December of 2000, and up from 4 million in July. Hiring also slowed in August, the report showed, and the number of jobs available fell to 10.4 million from a record high of 11.1 million the previous month. The data helps fill in a puzzle that's looming over the job market. Hiring slowed sharply in August and September, even as the number of posted jobs was near record levels. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, October 13th. I'm your reader, Kelly Neff. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.